right, there we go. Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. It's a Tuesday. And we're in August, people, a very important month, as our late president once, put it. And December is closing fast, and wedding preparations, wedding announcements, wedding. Well, we know that from this time of the year, just all the way through to December is just wedding announcements and, getting married in December, blah, blah, blah. And then we know how these things go. So then you have a bunch of divorces to follow in January. But that's not what we had to talk about. We're here to congratulate the Zambian president. That's President Hakainde Hichilema for securing a second term in office. One thing that I have come to learn about the not just the individual state of affairs, but national state of affairs, which sounds a little redundant, but is that in the very same way that no one is perfect, no country is perfect as well. This thought came into my head after I realized that the recent general election in Zambia, one thing that were you have to understand, at some point things went very chaotic. I mean like literally violent, that the Zambian Electoral Commission had to suspend the counting of votes for a period of 24 hours. Now, you have a bunch of observers that were also present, and that chaos, that's not the first one, by the way. That's not their first chaos. And if you were following the elections that were taking place in on this continent, and I believe Kenya is headed for the general election next year, and there's already like a lot of chaos going on. And this is all political, aka election, especially general election, election related. Just a few months ago, Ethiopia had their general election, and it was just one controversy after another, one rumors after another, and just a little bit of violence there, a little bit of violence there. Like the case for Ethiopia was somewhat very, so bad that some regions, they literally did not get to vote. And you have to understand, this is the seat of the African Union. And election discussions, or more like the state of affairs of the country that hosts the seat of the African Union, is so unstable that they had to completely suspend elections. In the previous election of Zambia in 2021, they had to count, they had to count and announce the final results that led to Hakainde Hichilema's first victory back in 2021. And when that announcement was made, it was made clear that there was one province in, there's one constituency, not province. There's one constituency in the Lusaka province that, whose votes were not counted. Although it was, at least it was announced that, looking at the results available, even if we were to sit and wait for the results coming out of that particular province, it's not going to have a lot of, material impact with regards to the numbers of who gets to win and, who gets to pack their bags and go home. Now, starting from Tanzania, where we just saw some all kinds of women, you are well represented in that one. The Tanzanian election was just mired in its own controversy. The Ethiopian election, and this is the home of the African, the seat of the headquarters, basically, of the African Union, mired in controversy. Mozambique, we are not even going to talk about. That was a whole another level of chaos. And bringing it here in Namibia, we have a tendency, at this point, we may as well just add the Supreme Court as part, or more like an extension of ECN, because every time we have a general election, especially the presidential national assembly election, well, that's basically one and the same thing in the like grand scheme of things. Now, one thing that we see there is we have a tendency of having our own chaotic situations, and then our rule of law pops in and reminds us that, okay, you know what, you may be, you know, pissed at each other that you want to punch each other in the face, but can we just let everything be decided by what the law says, not how I am feeling towards someone of a different political point of view? Now, so wherever you will look at this, before you start saying, oh, you know what, in America, things are, may I remind you, just Google January 6th, United States. You don't have to look for a lot of things. Just type January 6th, United States. And you'll find all kinds of information in relation. You realize, after Donald Trump's first term, he wanted to, you know, run for the second term, but then he was, got his, he got kicked out by Joe Biden. Now, he did not accept that loss very well, that he decided to organize his own, more like a light version of M23-ish. And they decided to storm the, decided to basically storm the White House. So that was election result motivated. Namibian election results that are always ending up at the Supreme Court to be decided, with the Supreme Court deciding the direction of the elections. Again, election motivated. So Mozambique has been mired in some series of controversies, and Kenya is also one of those countries that has seen some violent aftermaths of basically like especially presidential elections. So no country is perfect in the very same way that no person is perfect. Elections are going to be mired in controversies, some of them much worse than others. We just had ours, so we know how that feels. But I mean, we don't start firing guns and stuff. But this is where observers now become very important. So the recent election being held in Zambia. Pardon me.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. So we continue. Now the most interesting thing I find about the recently held elections, general elections in Zambia, where the sitting president Osowal acquired for himself, thanks to his voters and perhaps some interesting English and the promises made during the campaign. We have to understand this election was one of a very interesting one, because you have to understand, was that in 2021 when Zambia had to default on its debt? like the previous administration before, you know, before 2021 when Hakainde Hichilema took over. I don't know what those guys are doing. Now, there's an excellent example of this going on in, going on in the U.S. Everyone that has been following the U.S. Politics, especially the mayor of New York, who is now basically a superstar at this point. Every time that he announced something that he's doing, everyone in the comment section of pretty much every video I've seen is asking the same question, that what the heck was the previous mayor doing? Because clearly this guy seems to be doing everything. Now, putting all that aside, the thing is, some of the issues. I know that in 2021, when Edgar Lungu lost to Hakainde Hichilema in his, first, and by the way, that was not his first term running for that office. He'd been running for a while. Believe me, think of it, if you're gonna be a career politician, and mind you, isn't he a billionaire? Like he's, I think he's the same, financial status as the South African president, minus the whole SOFA banking, financial system. But the thing is, the administration before the Lungu administration, let me just say, the Lungu administration seemed to have acquired a lot of debt to the point where the country had to default on its debt. Like, when all these things are being done, people are watching. Voters are not idiots. You can't just derail the entire country's economy and then come election cycle, and you think, just a few speeches are going to fix everything. So 2021, Edgar Lungu loses, and a new political party, basically not the liberation struggle type of movement type of political party, takes office. It's something that we have also recently witnessed in Botswana. But for Zambia, that wasn't the first time. But one thing that you see here is that for those of you that are planning on being career politician, you have got to use your time in office wisely, because people are taking notes. And as always, the party that loses an election, the first thing that they claim is that, that was just unfair. And the very same thing I found interesting back in 2021, coming out of the Zambian, the Zambian political party, the late Edgar Lungu's party that lost the election, and they kept claiming, including the Edgar Lungu himself kept claiming the election was unfair. Were the elections fair? I don't know. What do I know about elections? Anyway, but here's the thing. When you are running a country to the point where it's like, this is very fascinating when you look at the patterns, because a country was run in a way that it acquired so much debt, it had to default. And when they lost the elections, they wondered how that happened. Really? That's the same nonsense you're going to be hearing now that winter has basically come to an end. Someone is going to find out that they are a couple of months due, and they will tell someone's son, and his first question was, how'd that happen? Wait, that's your first question? Because if that's your first question, I really hope our child doesn't take after you. Fingers crossed. Now, the thing is, why am I saying this? This is a fascinating pattern, minus the winter reference. Why am I saying this is a fascinating pattern? Because this is the exact same thing that we recently saw again in Senegal, where the Macky Sall administration seems to have misled, and I'm putting the misled in quotation mark, misled the IMF into borrowing money without meeting the required standards that they were supposed to meet before accessing those funds. Now, a lot of things now in relation to this questionable borrowing by the Macky Sall administration was only unraveled by the Faye administration after President Faye took over. And then they started, you know, exchanging political blows with Sonko, now his right-hand man, you know, best friend, long story short. Bro now just decided to start his own political party. And now he's a speaker of... there are no friends in politics. Zero. Absolutely zero. So the interesting part is you have someone in office that is just screwing up left, right, and center. And when they lose an election, they start going, how this happen? Right. So you have zero idea. Let me walk you through this. You told the IMF that your debt to GDP ratio was about 70%. Meanwhile, it was over 100%. And people had their sneaky suspicions. And that's why you were voted out. You need any further explanation? That's just a reference to Senegal. Now, after having gone through all the just a very simple, basic, like, you know, a pattern weaving that I've just pointed out, several things here. One, in the very same way that no person is perfect, there is not a single country that is perfect. Not when it comes to, you know, to development, not election, not political, not economic decisions. Mistakes are going to be made here and there. Just don't be too critical of yourself. And also by that, don't be too critical, I mean, don't go, you know, blowing each other up. Because this was the fear that was observed in the recent general election recently held in Ethiopia, where you had entire regions, not just constituents, you're talking about regions that were basically cut off from participating in the, you know, in the exercising of their own rights, which is their own, you know, their right to choose who gets to lead them. They were cut out. And there was actually a perfect explanation for that, because some of the regions that were cut out, they were unstable, as in it's just full of a bunch of guys that are armed to the teeth. So it's kind of not comfortable, you know, going to the poll and then running into someone who is in the queue with an AK-47. Like, are we here for democracy or a coup? Because if you have an AK-47 instead of a pencil, because, I mean, when you show up at the voting booth, you are not fighting the Avengers. You are there to just, you know, find, you know, a picture that resonates with you, and a name right next to it, and find an empty box right next to the picture and the name, and then put a cross in there with a pencil and have a good life. I don't think there's anything of, you know, there's anything in the voting booth that needs an AK-47. Unless we have different ways of voting. So, different countries are going to have different types of challenges in terms of disagreements in relations to elections. This is not something that's something that's new in new in Zambia, and I'm emphasizing that because I've read a couple of articles on this, and of course when it comes to when you halt an election counting like the Zambian Electoral Commission did, there is going to be a lot of allegations, obviously coming from allegations of some kind of something fishy going on behind closed doors, and they could be genuine, they could not be genuine, which is why it becomes very tricky to to prove. If you can say, I mean, if you are going to claim there's something fishy that happened during the 24-hour time period that that the ballot accounting was suspended, now you will have to provide proof. And because until you can provide that proof, even if I was the one that rigged the election, I would tell you, well, we didn't do anything wrong. Now, I'm not saying there was something fishy going on in the 24 hours that that the Zambian Electoral Commission suspended, suspended the elections, because you have to understand, it turns out it was bad. Like, there were attacks at some, in some polling stations, and you have some ballot boxes that were stolen. Like, they're like, really? This is now where I find power very fascinating. It's fascinating, but quick break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nenge lo wapubwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doini nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa. Ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. 27 minutes. We are 27 minutes into the hour of four, and you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And today, on today's menu, is no election is perfect. Not January 6th in the US. Not Ethiopia and mostly the Tigray regions. And now, like I pointed out earlier, Kenya is headed for general elections come 2027, and the chaos have already started.
Well, are we on Zambia or are we on US?
No. Let's just come back to Zambia.
Okay.
Now, Kenya is an interesting story.
You're in Kenya.
I imagine 2027 is going to be decorated. So now
it just might be.
Yeah, it might be.
Yeah. I mean, how many people have the knives out for William? Well, Bra Ruto will have to explain.
That's one long queue. That's one long queue.
He will have to please explain by himself. He is there by himself, no one else.
Now, look, this is what I was pointing out earlier about, look, I find it very fascinating how people start claiming almost like, you know, claiming foul play every time that they lose an election.
Mm.
But if you look at the state of affairs, how they basically ran the country, it's weird. Take in 2021, for example, when Edgar Lungu lost an election, like every, you know,
to Hichilema, basically.
To Hichilema. Like every party or individual that loses an election, they claim foul. But the country's economy was so bad, the country defaulted on its debt.
Under Lungu.
When did the borrowing start?
Before Lungu.
Exactly.
No, but the defaulting happened most while he was trying to correct things.
This is something that Lungu and his party were in office for a very long time.
Yeah.
And if you ask me, they had all the time to correct all the economic chaos. But if they
knew what to do,
that's even more painful, man.
If they knew what to do, yes.
I'm saying that's painful because if you find yourself in any executive position and you don't know what to do, why are you in that position? Because that's a question that will come.
Mm.
And we can even take another detour to Senegal, for example. Macky Sall's political party, you know, borrowed money to the IMF in a lot of questionable ways that was only unraveled by the Faye administration.
Mm.
So you have this trend of a political party, being in power for an extended period of time, and you have a lot of questionable economic decisions being made, and when they lose an election, they start claiming some kind of foul. Is there any foul? It could be, but the thing is, when you look at the series of decisions that be made, the thing is, people are not stupid.
Yes.
People are not stupid. They're watching. And the interesting thing is, in the previous election, Hakainde Hichilema, I think, won his election with, what, about 58 to 59% of the votes? And now he's in the 60-something.
61 versus 38. That was one of the last countings that also our colleague Anakleta basically highlighted for the social media
post, 61%
versus 38%. So it technically is a 60-40 split in terms of, and the party they stood against, that Hichilema's party stood against, was Lungu's party. We had the opportunity of forwarding a few questions to a Zambian resident in Zambia. Mr. Moses Banda, he had the opportunity of sharing with us specifically a few questions that we forwarded to him about what was the reason for the violence that happened on Saturday, Friday/Saturday, and ultimately was this the reason why the electoral authority in Zambia announced the postponement or the suspension of counting? What was behind that? Violence, meaning what fueled it. He gives a nice explainer. We thought we had the opportunity of interviewing the man for a decent amount of time. Unfortunately, Senor Banda decided to give us a good 4-minute summarized version of everything, which gives us the gist of much of the discussion. But yeah, if Helmut is...
Let's go to the audio.
Yeah, if Helmut is ready, yeah, we can do that.
We're all ready.
Yeah, you have very good questions here, but I'll make it brief. What really happens in Zambia for the violent? Zambia is not a province. It's a country with 10 provinces. And then under political affiliation, other provinces, the opposition won. And those are the people who were misled. They were rejoicing. Other people were running in the streets, doing this and that. That's why the Electoral Commission of Zambia suspended the announcement for the polling stations and for other constituencies to calm the situation. The opposition took a lot of votes in the northern part of Zambia, and that I'm talking about Brian Mundubile, and people were just too quick to do what? To celebrate. Yet, until the last constituency is mentioned, until all the figures are verified, that's when you can announce the presidential elections. And according to the constitution of the Zambian law, it says the time they will close the last polling station, they will add 72 hours to announce the winner. So they started voting on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. By the end of today, definitely the winner will be emerged. All right. How do Zambians feel about the Hichilema? Hichilema is not bad. He's doing very well. Not very well, but he's doing well, except that he needs a lot of time to comfort other ministries and other things which the former government left. Besides, the same Hichilema is, according to the Zambians, imagine the former president died in South Africa and he hasn't showed any remorse to bring the dead body or the coffin or the corpse to bury amicably in this country. We have a cemetery only for presidential, and we've buried about five of them in the same cemetery. It's called Memorial Park, just at the middle of the Ministry of Defense. If you come to Zambia, I'll drive you there. So the people are grieving because majority of the opposition, they are members of the former president, Edgar Chagwa Lungu. So they are grieving, and majority, they don't want him to say, no, this guy, how can you keep your fellow former president in South Africa for over a year? Honestly, these were the griefs. You see what I'm saying? These were the griefs. And I'm not the person to talk on behalf of the whole Zambians, but these are my personal perspective. Otherwise, Zambia is a beacon of peace in the whole Southern Africa. Even you in Namibia, if it wasn't for Zambia, you would have not got independence now. South Africa as well, Zimbabwe as well, you see, and many other countries. Zambia was a beacon of peace through Kenneth Kaunda, our first president. If there's any information, I'll let you know, because by the end of this day, maybe midnight, or any time in the evenings, they will announce the winner of the Republic of Zambia. It will be now the seventh president to take another term.
You know, that whole, President Edgar Lungu's burial controversy is one that I did not actually, you know, that it did not... I did not factor into the whole controversy thing. Mm. And politics is one interesting thing.
Well, Helmut, it's also...
Because the whole burial, I mean, was just one court case after another.
Yeah, and I think it's still ongoing in
South Africa.
In South Africa, yeah. Because Lungu passed away most in South Africa.
Yeah.
Or did he pass away in another country? And then he was moved to South Africa.
I think it was in South Africa.
Yeah, but... The concern from that engagement had been something like, firstly, I didn't anticipate how that would even factor into sentiments. Because when I sent the questions through via David, because it's one of David's former university colleagues as well, who's currently back in Zambia. When I sent the questions through, I had to, you know, think about just the Saturday, Friday events, you know, the violence,
yeah.
And that led to the suspension. So that question obviously got answered, like, from the get-go.
Yeah.
Mr. Banda is correct. When you look at Zambia, Zambia isn't usually a country you would hear at the forefront of election violence.
Mm-hmm.
Not always. Even when Hichilema won back in 2021 yeah. against Lungu, the COVID situation was still there, but you didn't hear like severe election, you know, disruptions because of intra-party or intra-political party violence against each other. You didn't hear that.
Yeah.
But if you take a whole bunch of the other Southern African countries, for example, and I'm sorry, I have to start at Zimbabwe. At Zimbabwe, there was a lot of mis- and disinformation about potential election disruptions at polling stations.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, there were scenarios that some members of a community would show up, then they were not registered, but they demanded to still vote, which led to particular delays in the voting process or casting of votes. That was back to the last particular elections of Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
It wasn't also violent. It wasn't Mozambique that we obviously saw.
Yeah, Mozambique was worse.
The pinnacle of that. It's not Madagascar where a democratically elected government was voted in. The concerns of last year happened with that particular, with the rioting that happened. And then the military decided to implement a coup d'etat, which saw the president run off to the island of Mayotte, the French territory of Mayotte. Mm. And the president is still there. Just for the SADC community leaders at the end of last year. I know you're laughing, but I have to cite this. Just for the SADC community members, literally saying in the most passive, but the softest, but most polite voices, and please can Madagascar please return to a civilian government situation again. These particular scenarios, Mozambique, Madagascar, I won't put Zimbabwe in the same bracket as them. Zimbabwe is separate because they are peaceful. It is peaceful. I don't know that much about Eswatini and Lesotho because they're technically kingdoms. So you don't... the last particular political violence that Lesotho saw was also just after COVID when the sort of like internal... the internal tensions had boiled over where some lobby groups, I'll call them lobby groups, weren't happy with the multi-party system that Lesotho has. Now it led to riots. It led to a standoff between the activists versus the legislative. And the concerns, technically, they weren't addressed. They weren't ironed out. And that discussion quietly just fizzled away of what happened during 2020 and 2021, specifically in Lesotho. South Africa, I'll put South Africa also there in that mixed bag of how political parties can influence, crises in a country. We go back to 2021. We now know the culprit had been Jacob Zuma's daughter. And if you guys have ever heard some of the funny and weird things that Jacob Zuma is busy planning as a political head of MK Party, where he wants to install traditional leaders between legislative and judiciary and the president. How do you install a bunch of people that are inheriting power, Helmut, over a constitution? I know we're talking about Zambia here.
The biggest problem with that is you're talking about oil and water here. It's not gonna mix. I mean, the whole the whole idea of representative governance went mainstream because people wanted to shift away from monarchies. Inherited power, aka monarchy. Into elected representative,
exactly.
Someone answerable to
and
the
his
people.
Suggestion is putting an entity between a president and the division of powers.
Yeah, I know that.
And the president is the head of the executive.
That's not a president, that's a king.
Do you see the funny thing? Yeah. So that this technically means, and here's the funny thing, Amul. I have seen such a template before. In a comic book.
No kidding.
There's a comic book I've been reading for the past 10 years because it's a Japanese comic book. But it's actually been running for more than 10 years. It's now almost 20 years old, this comic book. Its name is One Piece, and it's about...
Oh, yeah.
It's about, you remember, the main character, Monkey D. Luffy.
Yeah.
Or Luffy. No, Monkey, yeah, the surname. No? Yeah, Luffy D. Yeah, it's Japanese. Luffy D. Monkey is his name, because his grandfather's name is Garp D. Monkey.
Remember the protest in Nepal?
I know. It was Luffy. It was Luffy.
See, that's what happens when Gen Z goes for a
protest. They watch Luffy. They watch One Piece. They don't understand One Piece, but they watch One Piece. Okay, so Luffy's character, right? Or the whole discussion about what Luffy is rebelling against, which is technically like freedom.
Yeah.
Which is... guys, we have to grow up sometimes, ne? Your freedom comes with restrictions. You can't have absolute freedom. There's no such thing. And I think that's what happened in Madagascar as well. No, Madagascar was also Luffy, Helmut.
Wait,
Luffy was also there. Luffy was also in Madagascar.
One Piece went
Luffy was in Madagascar. So, So the concerns that come out from there is that we have to recognize... Okay, just to give you a synopsis of what Luffy was up against.
Yeah.
So there's an entity known as the World Government in the universe of One Piece.
Yeah.
The World Government has a policing element, which is a navy, which they call the Marine Corps. And then above them, is like the Celestial Government, which is made up by noblemen and royals that make decisions for the rest of the world. And above that was the Council of Four. Four men that decides that make the last decisions about anything that happens in the world, the universe of One Piece.
Mm-hmm.
And above those four men was it has now been revealed, it's an immortal character that lives, been living for the past 800 years. So, yes, I know. Because I've been reading the comic for so long. I even forgot. I would read, and then I would stop at the latest chapter, and then I would skip like 6 or 7 months, catch up then with a whole bunch of new chapters, and then do the same thing. But yeah, so
that's how I watch series. I just don't have the patience to wait for when the next episode is coming out.
Exactly.
Just wait for the whole thing, then I can just watch it once more.
Now, the idea espoused by the mangaka, a mangaka or a judoka is known as a practitioner. The ka means practitioner. So the artist / author of One Piece, Eiichiro Oda speaks to a specific kind of a reader, a specific kind of audience. You know, you were a 12-year-old, 10, 11-year-old boy when you read, start when this comic came out in 2004 or 5, and you literally grew up with this comic.
Reading it.
Because Luffy also matures, you know, through each of the particular, they call it arcs, or it's like, you know, you can think of it like seasons, but through each arc of the comic book, because it's now more than 1,000 chapters that it's got. Through each of these arcs, you see Luffy and his party also develop. So, obviously, the audience has grown up with the comic.
Yeah.
It's 20 years, I mean, or more than 10 years. Now, yes, the anime is there, which the Gen Z's watched, which is Madagascar and Nepal. But in the same case, you can see that they used the obvious thing that Luffy was looking at versus the behind-the-scenes developments.
Mm-hmm.
The behind-the-scenes developments, Helmut, which is one of the reasons why I read the comic and I don't watch the anime or the animation, because I realize with the animation, they sort of softened some of the themes. Luffy has, the comic has violence in it. And the comic has strong political messaging in it. Messaging that you don't easily see in the animation. And even in the movies that they've made.
Yeah.
What am I talking about? Well, one of the biggest things that Luffy's against is slavery. Slavery is heavy in the comic. One of the biggest things that is also, now slavery, if you don't know, is a severe form of exclusion, meaning discrimination. So for you to come now in a modern day context and look at Nepal and possibly Madagascar and looking for the slavery / discrimination component, yeah, you'd have to argue. You'd have to argue, you know, your oil and water theory. Oil and water, literally.
Look, the next year, those two mixing and working together, you have to understand that even the monarchs that survived the democratic dispensation.
Yeah.
Now described as constitutional monarchy, yes. Which is why they are more of a symbol than they don't really have the they power and authority they had when it was an absolute monarchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, if you were to bring back absolute monarchy, who's going to believe that nonsense that, God just gave the power to you and your family?
Or you were suddenly born and you just got everything. Well, it does happen. I mean, look at Charles III. It also includes probably the Eswatini king as well. Wake up and your dad tells you, hey, listen, you can have 20 wives.
You know, all these things that you can see.
And even the modern day men would go like, listen, you know, five is a stretch in this modern economy. Five is your threshold.
Five is your threshold. My bank account. One
is the limit.
One is the limit. And even that is a serious struggle.
it's a development issue. It's a development job. So if you see the villainy of what Jacob Zuma explained in that one video clip that I saw on YouTube, I was like, what is this old man up to?
For that to work, it's going to take a lot of consolidation of power. And every time that power is consolidated by someone that takes over power by force, because that's the only way it's gonna happen. Because you're talking about overhauling the entire South African constitution here.
Yeah.
And now that means that overhauling is going to require a lot of legislative hands on deck to basically restructure. To distribute that power in a way that is not abused by any of either the president or I don't know where you're going to fit some kind of monarchy type of power structure somewhere in between. So that working out is going to, think of it this way. It's like bringing a surgeon and your traditional healer somewhere in the middle of the savannah to work on a patient in the theater.
You bring
someone is going abracadabra, someone is saying pass me a scalpel. This is the type of confusion you are dealing with here.
You're bringing a surgeon and you're bringing the witch doctor.
Yeah.
Or the, well, what did you call it? Did you use witch doctor? Or did you say traditional healer?
I would say traditional healer.
Okay.
Because
abracadabra is very close to the witch doctor side of things.
I think the main difference between a traditional healer is at least from a technical or more like a traditional point of view, is that a traditional healer uses apps but a witch doctor is the one who is telling you, you know what, I saw you coming here, dude. You lie.
You stood up, sir. You stood up and you watched me from your gate. That's what you saw. I saw you come. But anyway.
Something was bothering you yesterday.
Really. I knew you would show up. But yeah, okay. So now, just moving away now from the other SADC analysis.
Yeah.
What Mr. Banda cites is that we can obviously see that there was some aspect of mis and disinformation taking place.
It's in the political sphere, so mis and disinformation is expected.
Yeah, and it was it is technically justified, or not justified, confirmed to a length by the EU observer mission. They say it was mostly on digital platforms.
Yeah.
I just went to find the report again that I sent to you. So they cited in their summary, and this is and these observer mission reports, guys, came out literally on the Saturday, the 15th of August. They said the... I just want to find the mis- and disinformation component. They said on the social media platforms, false claims and discreditation persists amidst growing self-censorship. Is on page 2, Helmut.
Yeah.
On the, it's actually the first point from the top. And this resulted, this was resulting from restrictive cyber laws. Social media extended the main candidate's reach as well, which also offered those with less resources a low-cost alternative to rallies and for paid broadcast. Ethnic and violent language was limited in the EU elections observer mission monitoring. They didn't see it. Basically, that's what they're saying. And in terms of verification, the iVerify platform was consistent and professional in debunking false claims, which included issues around the ballots and the ECZ. This is the electoral authority of Zambia. The president, the internet shutdowns, because apparently there were claims were made that there were internet shutdowns in Zambia. This iVerify platform technically kept debunking some of these claims, which technically could have been that the person probably walked into a dead zone where there was no internet coverage and then claimed that there was internet shutdown. Or they probably didn't have data. That is also another plausible explanation. And also the opposition figures, meaning statements that the opposition were bringing out in Zambia regarding the developments at ballot boxes and the likes. So this iVerify platform technically stood out as a neutral, as a fact-checking neutral resource that was helping every citizen in Zambia establish the facts around some of the rumors, some of the discourse, some of the shared social media content. And I mean, do you know what's the funny thing? I watched a TV series recently. I don't like going back in history with many TV series, meaning I don't like watching. If the thing only came out in 2022, I don't want to go back to it. But this, my illegal Russian site played a trick on my eyes, and then they decided to put 2022 under 2025, however. And then, you know, because it had two brackets, and I only read the 1 year. So this TV series is one. It's known as the Silent War, but it's technically the British Secret Service against the Russian Secret Service in cyber warfare and the likes. On the ground, the story obviously follows a young British MI6 intern. She starts as an intern, and the other story that is posed against her is her former classmate, a Russian. Weapons trafficker son, because his father makes millions from selling weapons. What's the name actually for those people?
It's giving Victor Bout. An arms dealer?
Arms dealer, yeah. His dad is an arms dealer. And so the character's name is Vadim, the Russian guy. Vadim and the intern, the other lady, they both came from the same university. Vadim stepped out. He dropped out of the university because he was obviously a rich kid, rich family's kid, because he doesn't want to do IT, but he's good. He's got talent in software engineering development as well as also cybersecurity skills, because he can hack. And then Vadim gets kidnapped by the KGB's new name? The FSB. Just so that they can get to his dad. And then his dad has to make a deal with the FSB because he knows the FSB guys. And the FSB guys are very friendly. They say, okay, fine. Vadim will give you a job even. You know, we negotiated with your dad. So Vadim gets a job. And this thing primarily follows before that point, before the kidnapping, where Vadim started. I saw how, because in many cases, many of the fictional stories that we see in TV stories and in TV series and in movies, they have a sense of background research that the movie producers made.
Yeah.
For example, like the thing that I shared with you about how the US Army and the CIA, their investment arms. And then there's a report that I watched the other day of how there was an actual guy in the CIA who wrote whole scripts like Meet the Parents. of what's the guy's name? The guy that has he has a birthday close to mine, also in November. What's the guy's name? Ben Stiller. Ben Stiller's Meet the Parents with Robert De Niro. You know Meet the Parents, and then you know Meet the Fockers. It's not a swear word that I'm saying. That's the actual movie name.
No, Meet the Parents, yeah.
Meet the Parents was number one, ne? Because they made three movies.
Yeah.
So Meet the Parents is number one. The whole script was written by the CIA.
I think if you look at the entertainment industry in the West,
look,
it's not a secret that their Department of Defense works in very close proximity with
proximity.
All you just have to do is what type of toys do you want for your movie, and we got it all.
Yeah, that's like, Michael Bay. And when you get to Jason Bourne. One of Tom Clancy's books.
Yeah.
That Harrison Ford played the character in the movie. It was a 1989 movie. What's the movie's name, Dochman?
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere urikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana. Konongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nuneo don, o tukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe pa omarudi tayo loka. O kone ushendife nawa, nukumona o ijamoiri nawa. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali, nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu batatu, o mafelane Eagle FM. The eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. So let's continue with today's Home Run. If you just tuned in, Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, your drive time show on Eagle FM, keeping you company wherever you're tuned in from. Thank you for tuning in. So, mis and disinformation. It's not something that's, it's not something that is unique to Zambia as the EU observers observed.
No, it's not.
It's not.
Oh, sorry for the shuffling of papers, guys. Yeah. Sorry. There was something that caught my eye. No, it's not, Helmut, because let's look at that example I was about to finish before. I also got sidetracked by jumping into another thing about how Hollywood and the militaries of the global north are invested in their local movie making spectrums. That's probably why India has a lot of the Superman, themes running through the Bollywood movies. My brother told me once he was made to watch a whole bunch of Bollywood movies where the guy flies through everything and the bullets bounce off his, and I'm like, really? They copy and pasted the Superman theme. Then he said, yeah. You see, the action and the special effects are wonderful in Bollywood movies. You're even captured there as a viewer, but then you go like, nah, man, I've seen these things before.
you know where Indian movies, someone like Bollywood, takes it to an extreme?
Yeah.
Someone will be shooting my friend at close range, you know, Kahanja. Mm. And I'll be coming from here to go and catch the bullet.
Oh. And the whole theatrics of how you're running from here.
Yeah, from here.
To catch the bullet.
Yeah, through the speed hump.
Yeah.
To go and catch the bullet.
Yeah.
They show you all those. Like, how slow is this bullet? Like, at this point, you should be...
Oh, how fast are you moving?
Yeah.
That you have not disintegrated because of all the laws
of physics.
That's exactly
what's going to happen, because you're going to disintegrate if you will have to run fast enough to catch a bullet.
Yeah.
That is being shot about almost 100 kilometers away. Now, but the thing is, the use of entertainment industry and espionage is not something that's new.
Mm.
Yeah. The French, most of the stories I've read on the use of celebrities, in espionage are French. But the thing is, you have Josephine Baker, Julia Child, you have Cary Grant, you have Frank Sinatra. All of these guys have been, alleged to have worked in close proximity with, with their country's intelligence services. That's where you see that the entertainment industry is to some degree very, in a lot of countries, very weaved into the country's, intelligence service. Because you have to understand, they have this status as a celebrity, for example.
Yeah.
So you have nations leaders that would like to see them. When Michael Jackson filmed "They Don't Care About Us" in Brazil, "They Don't Care About Us" was filmed in the most dangerous part of Brazil, the part that was not controlled by the government. It was controlled by a bunch of drug dealers.
Mm.
The drug dealers offered to, they just told him, "Mikey, a huge fan. Don't worry. This place, no one is going to touch you." And they filmed the entire thing. Now,
talk about local content.
I know, right?
And my local beneficiation.
Look, man, that's a sign that, when it comes to celebrities, even arms dealers have their favorite celebrity. Now, yes. that reach gives one, a type of access that your regular, intelligence operative does not have.
Mm.
Yeah, unless you will have to send them through undercover. But the thing is, when someone is already at the top of their career, then you can easily just employ them. But the thing is, in the world of intelligence, chances are very high you're going to get them killed.
Yeah. The concerns have been also, Helmut, that like Mr. Banda cited, Zambia is primarily peaceful.
Yeah.
The other question that I asked, that he also just summarized fantastically in a couple of minutes, was the one about, the perspectives and of the current president, who's now, won re-election, Hichilema. What were the perspectives of Hichilema coming into this particular elections? And the nice thing that was explained is that you can see that there's still a lot of corrective work that his administration had been busy with up to this election, and that, I can't say it categorically whether or not Mr. Banda is, favors President Hichilema or not. I can't say it, but I also cannot say when he gave the explanation for how the rest of the country, like the political opponents of Mr. Hichilema's party, how they also view him, and he gave, a perspective which has been probably the other half of Zambia regarding how Lungu's passing and the treatment of his family, and also the suspicions and the rumors. Because I know the South African news outlet ENCA and the South African Broadcasting Service SABC, they tried to explain the standoff between the Lungu family in South Africa and the Zambian government and Hichilema. Mm-hmm. They tried. They didn't give a convincing explanation as to, okay, why did Lungu decide to go and live in South Africa? Why? I mean, none of our former presidents are living outside of Namibia. Okay, with an exception, if you look at Cameroon, please, let's not talk about Cameroon.
Yeah.
That's a unique case. That's a case study by itself. That's a unique case. But
it's an immortal case.
Yeah. I almost said something in the same line, you know, it's but I went with a diplomatic response, yeah.
Yeah.
So, it is funny that a lot of the particular, okay, look, Zambia's got a lot of people. How much you had Zambia, the map of Zambia up there in front of you? How many does it say there? What's the current population? Because Zambia is a lot of people.
Yeah, the last time I checked, they were at about 14 million. Now, just hang on a second.
Because the voter stats that were shared by, what's her name, by Anacleta a little bit earlier.
The 2023 estimates puts the numbers at 20.2 million.
So apparently...
Jeez.
The counting that was done,
yeah,
the registered voters that Zambia have is 7 million on the dot. And Hichilema got... 2.4 million voters.
Yeah.
And the closest rival from the NRPUP party, which is known as the Tonsa Alliance, they got 1.4 million. So 2.4 versus 1.4, this technically means that there was a major abstention, probably, because only 4 million votes out of the 7 million were cast. This means that only 57% of voters had shown up. This also translates to basically that it seemed like it was going to be a two-horse race the whole time. And when we look at this two-horse race scenario, they mention here that 192 constituencies, were announced at the time of the 2.4 million versus 1.4 million front runners. 192 constituencies had been counted at that time. So, wait. Here's the other one. So by the end of everything that was counted, Hichilema had apparently recorded 2.9 million votes, and the second place candidate that's Brian Mundubile had recorded 1.8 million. Remember, it was 2.5 and 1.4 million respectively.
Yeah.
So, yeah. This is a scenario specifically where we can obviously see, out of that 14 million, 50% were registered to vote. And obviously 4 million out of the 7 million, which translates probably to, 4/7. This technically would be like 70%. No, I'm lying. 60%, basically. Close to 60%. It would translate to 60% of the registered voters showed up to participate. So when we look at that dimension, of the perception of Hichilema leading up to this elections,
yeah,
you get to understand, okay, so there was almost 2 million Zambians, almost 2 million of them, that didn't like the public spat between Hichilema and Lungu, even up to when Lungu passed away.
There's an interesting comparison that you'll find here.
Mm.
2021 elections, for the presidential elections, there were 7,023,499 registered voters.
Yeah.
And 71% basically of them showed up. to vote.
76.
71% of them showed up to vote.
Yeah.
And fast forward to 2026 and the recently held general elections for the presidential elections, you have 8,786,300 voters registered. So basically you have to round it up, you have 7 million people that voted.
Mm.
That registered to vote, mm. not that voted. You have 7 million people that registered to vote in for the 2021 elections, general elections, and for the presidential elections.
It's now out 8 million. The one for 2026.
For 2026, it's now it's 8.7. So it's basically 9 million.
Yeah.
Now out of the 7 million that registered to vote in for the 2021 general elections. 71% turned out to vote
mm.
out of the 7 million. 71% showed up.
Yeah.
Out of the 8.7, basically 9 million that registered to vote for the general elections in 2026, 57% showed up to vote. That's a drastic decline.
Yeah, probably also shows a little bit of an abstention.
Yeah, it's a huge one, from 70 to 50.
Yeah, it probably shows an abstention. In between, we also have to basically, what do they call that thing, calculate for new people, you know, because obviously yes, almost a 1.6 or 1.7 million increase from the 2021, the voter base, the amount of registered voters.
Yeah.
So just as a point of correction, guys, that little statistic I read was something that my colleague Anaketa shared earlier. I thought it was up to date, just now verifying in terms of the actual amount of registered voters in Zambia is 8.7, like Helmut said, 8.7 million. So we clearly see that, there is obvious, if I think now basically like in an economic sense, there is a clear market for politics and multi-party politics. There's a share of 8 million voters to go around, you know, how you can dissect and thus communicate your policies through and your ambitions as a party. The concern,
sometimes I don't really realize just how few we are as a population until I start looking at these numbers. I mean, these are just the registered voters. That's not the whole country.
You know, it's a funny thing.
Yeah.
When we did Germany last year, remember? When I told you they voted on a Sunday.
Holy cow.
They voted on a Sunday.
Yeah.
The votes were cast, were collected, were calculated and counted. And by the end of the Sunday, 6 o'clock, you knew Friedrich Merz had won a country that has 80 million people.
We couldn't count three. Actually, forget
no,
three.
No, we couldn't count. How many voters did we have? One million?
One point something.
It was 1.4, right? One point.
Jeez.
That was 1.4. We couldn't count 700,000 votes in a day.
I think counting wasn't our problem. It was casting the votes that was where biggest delay was.
Yeah, and the verification process, obviously, of the data.
Mm.
Because here at Eagle FM, we also try to sort of like, you know, do our, I won't say amateur way, but apparently the ECN didn't like it when, journalists showed up at the voting stations
mm-hmm.
and then took photos of the little record document, that paper that they stick to the station.
Yeah.
They didn't like that. And I mean, then, the basic question you would then have to ask is then, why would you have that document up there? To basically say what? If that document and the verification and the auditing that has to take place at the head office of the ECN, why then allow the what they call it, the presiding officers to then put up that document at the stations?
I think this is where transparency now collides with technicality because, one thing about the public sector, take ECN for example, they are established through an ECN. Through an act.
Yeah.
And so they have an act of parliament that basically strictly outlines their mandate, who gets to announce the results, and how the procedures that must be followed as part of the verification process before announcing, so that little to no mistakes are made. When you're announcing, when you're sharing information that is as sensitive and a lot of people are eager to hear what you're going to say. So you have to filter your information to make sure that it's all correct on a lot of levels before you make it public, because you don't want to give half cooked information only and then say, you know what, those numbers were actually, we didn't verify those ones properly. First of all, they're going to question your competency, and that's how again mis and disinformation of something fishy going on is it's fueled.
And
that's where political opportunists basically use that as one of those things that they can basically use to fan the flames into something as dangerous as what we saw transpiring in Mozambique.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing about Mozambique was, Helmut, it was all started around an accusation and then the death of the lawyer. The legal representative of the opposition party.
And that doesn't help.
Yeah, which did not help.
Yeah.
Which technically should have been a scenario of let the police do their job. And then obviously the opposition, they went haywire and complete bonkers with, their accusations and stuff. And then Mozambique fell into chaos. What we obviously see from this particular engagement. Now, I want to get into one of the other observer mission reports, because the EU one was pretty standard, cited, small things like accessibility for people with living with disability, dimensions of how peaceful was the voting process. Those things were confirmed by the EU itself. Mm-hmm. The next preliminary report we're sitting with here is the one from the Electoral Commission's Forum of SADC Countries, the ECF. They were also here in Namibia back in 2024. They were the ones that we had the lovely sort of like, them, the AU one, and the, what was the third one? Was ECF, AU, and SADC, yes. All three basically said everything was top notch in Namibia. Everything was running smoothly, except what they did not like was the failure of the technology on the day.
Yeah.
Meaning the tablets kept
overheating.
They kept overheating, and so, there was a lot of...
That led to basically delays
continuous,
in the
election
process.
And into the verification process.
And the logistics around ballot paper distribution. It's like there was a lot of underestimation with regards to voter turnout.
Yeah, at many polling stations in Namibia. But we did cast our votes. Now, I'm once again going into the post-election environment because the ECF here under paragraph 6 outlines a couple of things. You'll find them on page 3, Helmut. So they say here, now while the mission continues to observe the immediate post-election environment in liaison with other international observer missions in the country, the mission resolved as follows. The election day procedures generally proceeded well. First off. That's something that Mr. Banda basically also confirmed, with no reports of widespread intimidation or significant disruptions to polling. The mission, however, observed some operational and logistical challenges, which Namibia also suffered greatly from.
Yeah.
I mean, Zimbabwe also suffered a bunch of logistical things, something similar to what we suffered from. There was either a lack of budgeting or adequate calculation of how many voters would show up at a station.
Yeah.
And then you suddenly see there's this influx or this surge of voters at one particular station. Now, they further on continue in that same paragraph to explain the challenges, including delay in delivery and inadequacy of materials, which will be elaborated in its preliminary statement. The preliminary statement will also cover the mission's assessment of the pre-election environment. So they were still holding back a little bit until the counting finished. Remember, these preliminary reports and statements, Hamoud, came out during the period of the suspension of the release of the results of Saturday. The ECF then continues to say that they are a peer-to-peer mission to the ECZ, which plays a crucial role in supporting its member missions at critical moments in the delivery of the mandate, but the ECZ is at such a critical moment, and this informs a change of approach to the mission's deployment in Zambia. They also mentioned that the mission, while the mission was originally scheduled to close on 16 August, which was the Sunday, given the current circumstances, this is not the Saturday when the statement was read, the leadership of the mission will remain in the country until 19 August. And during this period, the mission will observe the results tallying, which currently is about to end at the end. I was hoping for at the end of yesterday, like Mr. Banda explained, because Mr. Banda recorded that for us yesterday. But obviously things cascaded into this morning. And clearly, you know, this, it does put Hichilema up as the favorite because it, is technically declaring that he is the successful winner, for re-election or for reinstallment. And they noted primarily also, and that the work by staying on till the 19th, which is tomorrow. Of the other international observer missions that have the mandate also to undertake preventive diplomacy. Now, they further on, just to end, the mission will scale down to 8 members, including the mission leader, whose departure date will be at 19 August, and the other mission delegates will depart on the initial date of 16 August, which was Sunday, and that the mission will continue to assess the immediate post-election environment and determine its readiness to release a more detailed preliminary statement. This was read out by the mission head, Justice Annabel Mtalimanja. And yeah, she read out this particular statement back on Saturday. So yeah, they were obviously, that's now from the ECF. They were obviously observing the climate because of what Mr. Banda explained to us, which we also saw from the EU statement, primarily being that it seems that social media is the culprit once again. Social media. Yes, Samurai, I didn't finish my explainer of that TV series, The Silent War or whatever thing. In there, you know, you could see how movie makers research certain particular mechanisms and things, you know, from reality to bring it into, to make the storytelling more authentic.
Yeah.
In there, Helmut, they give insight in terms of how a social media, for us, you and me, it's known as a troll farm. You remember the thing you explained to me that is in Southeast Asia, the guys that sit with a 700 phones in front of him?
And then they write responses. Phone farms.
Yeah, phone farms.
Yeah.
Now, imagine the same thing, but not with phones, but now with social media accounts, and you've got PCs. But it works like this, apparently. It's 4 people sitting in a cluster. You have a social media account. I have an account. There's someone else here to the left, and there's someone else here to the right. And let's say a news article pops up from a media place in Namibia, and then you respond to the article. You read a few lines, and then you make an antagonistic comment.
Yeah.
And then I come out and I argue against you, and then you respond back to me, and then person number 3 responds and says, "Yeah," and takes the whole discussion eastwards, and person number 4 takes the discussion, you know, into a westwards discussion direction.
Yeah.
All these things basically highlighted specifically how you can anticipate how these social media meddling takes place. But here's the thing. I will put this, for example, to the scholars and the authors, not just the authors and the academics and the trained locals, for example, in Zambia, who also studied political science. Many of them also know about the tricks of campaigning and lobbying. I mean, in the so-called democratic world, a lobbyist also influences a decision and a policy. In slightly authoritarian countries, you know, slightly authoritarian, you've got sycophancy, or you've got, you know, this bag of ticks attached to the buffalo situation. You know, the buffalo provides all nutrition, sustenance, you know, longevity and all that for this cluster of ticks.
And also, you know, transport.
That's a good one. Transport as well. Yeah, transport as well. So, yeah, so we had to, but in both scenarios, ne, lobbying still takes place. You still see lobbying. Whether the lobbying is top down or whether the lobbying is from, you know, from a parallel level, which is completely divorced from legislation or lawmaking, influencing or even executive powers, lobbying still comes in some way from an interest group.
Yeah.
Now, I joined a workshop yesterday, which I didn't go to today, because I realized I would. But before that, we've got an ad break keeping up on us, guys. We'll come back right after this.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today.
Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. We continue. So, where were you?
The story I wanted to tell you guys was, so yesterday I went to this workshop that was also related to elections primarily, but it was organized by a CSO organization based on recommendations coming from various stakeholders that observed Namibia's last elections of last year and of the 2024 elections. No? Yeah, the 2024 elections, the presidential elections as well. So these recommendations were used as sort of like to bring together all stakeholders, which included media. I was the only media person, I have to mention that as well, which was very surprising because even Ministry of Education was there. And I was even wondering, why was Ministry of Education people here? But anyway, still. And a lot of CSO participants and then political parties. At that particular engagement, guys, even at that basic workshop, There was a representative of ECN there. I think she's the head of the operations. And many people in the workshop thought that they could get, you know, like their direct answers right there, you know, like things would be solved right there. But what many people forget in like a Namibian context or even in modern, countries in terms of governance and if you follow a democratic principle or even your name has the word republic in front of it, because republic technically reflects a democratic notion, many of the people there thought they could get their way like right there. And then also you could see a whole bunch wanted to throw, okay, there was one guy. He wanted to throw technically, you know, like silent bricks to the ECN in a way. And people don't understand. If you have large organizations like the ECN who have to deal with large budgets, large staff contingents, their project management level is technically the whole country.
Yeah.
You realize the job is not, you know, it's not a nimble organization. The job is not a job about how quickly you can react to something. It wasn't a public health scare that they've got to respond to, like Ministry of Health, that can just go and seek executive powers from a president and ask a president, listen, make a proclamation that you are suspending certain liberties of the country.
Yeah, until we contain
This outbreak that happens, and then poof, voila, there you go. It's not that process. And even then, it was difficult for Minister of Health to, you know, to actually achieve the best possible outcome that they could.
Yeah.
But I even saw, Hamad, which technically reinforces the notion that I've had for a long time, observing and seeing election and participating in election processes, even in peaceful Zambia, as Mr. Banda had cited, you will always find bad actors, and you will always find agitators, and you will always find someone who just believes today is my day, it's election season, let's start something. Let's release some bees or some hornets in someone's peaceful, you know, kitchen, and let's see them deal with this emergency.
Look, this is where I think social media, is presenting one of its downsides.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apart from a lot of countries, especially in the, you know, in developing countries, instituting age restriction with regards to the use of social media. And it turns out in Africa, it's only Gabon that has done that. Yeah. Which I found fascinating.
That is done what?
Yeah. Age restriction.
But apparently it's failing in the UK and in Australia in Canada.
No, just picture how difficult it is to police. That's the thing. Because you'll have to, how do you police that? You'll have to storm every door to...
Or you do what China does.
What's that?
You cut off the internet from the rest of the world so that you can manage that internet.
Boy, do I have a story for you. One thing that a lot of parents will tell you, those that are basically, you know, that have especially kids that are adult, one thing that you see is that the older your child grows, the more they basically outmaneuver a bunch of restrictions that you put in place.
Yeah.
So especially,
and it's never permanent.
Yeah. No. Put one in place. The next thing you know, they have figured out a way to just go around it. So you'll have to come up with a new one.
Yeah.
And we've all been there. We were all at some point guilty of that. Your parents were there thinking, you know what? He's in his room. Meanwhile, the whole time you just lined up pillows and then covered it like a blanket. And your mom walks in your room and is like, isn't he just an angel? Homeboy is not in that room.
Mm. You already jumped through the window.
I know.
And then she wonders, why is his window open? And then she sees the footmarks there on the windowsill. Oh, look at him. And then and then your mom waits for you at the back door or at your window as you come back. Helmut. I know you were caught.
They'll just wait for you to, you know, to get in your room and get in your blanket thinking that you got away with it. That's when they turn on the light.
And they go like, well, you know, you made my day. You know, it's been a long time since I've exercised my right arm. My swinging arm, you know. And we're not talking about Barry Bonds or Alex Rodriguez swinging or Brian Lara playing cricket.
No.
Or Roger Federer even, you know. This was nothing sport-like.
In June, there was a protest in India.
Yeah.
There was a protest in India, and something interesting happened. Now, the protests in Delhi have brought focus to the messaging app. This was in June, Brief Cherry, Briar, and BitChat. BitChat uses Bluetooth.
Mm.
That's the one that Indian protesters, youth, were using. Because there was an internet blackout.
Are you talking about the cockroach party movement?
A cockroach what?
Haven't you heard about the cockroach party movement? Apparently a lawmaker did say it, the Minister of Education in India, that the youth in India are cockroaches. So,
Jesus.
The youth they started to establish themselves digitally as the Cockroach Party.
I mean, look, they really, you know, they really did find a workaround.
Yeah.
Using Bluetooth. And we're talking
which
about,
is free.
We're talking about India here. Mm. And now, there's a reason behind, I mean, when it comes to tech, their education is top notch, which is why they dominate the tech industry in terms of, you find a lot of executive guys in a lot of, in Silicon Valley, Indians. So that means,
from India, guys.
Not
from the US.
From India.
Yeah.
Now, that means their tech skills, because of the education available, it's very high compared to a lot of countries. So that means the internet restriction that a lot of countries have implemented in the event of a riot or a protest, they thought it was going to work, except it didn't. So now what that means is it has basically set a template. So that means every time there is some kind of chaos going on in the country, every president that will bring about, or every country that will bring about the whole enforcement of an internet blackout, they will have to factor GitHub in.
Yeah.
The only thing is, for a lot of countries, especially in developing countries with a Umukuru development community type of high school, they don't even know what GitHub is, so you don't have to worry about that.
What? Umkuru.
Umkuru Development Community High School. Look,
you know, like David, who's just been project schooling everybody.
Look, man, if you and HD and David and Hileni, you know how to use this technology, the short range wavelength communication.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to do that.
Mm.
And you want to talk to me? I'll be very difficult to reach because, well, I have the smartphone. It has Bluetooth.
Mm.
It's a skills issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what this means is...
But we know that at least, you know how to use Bluetooth now. But...
Yeah.
Okay.
If you don't know how to use Bluetooth, hey.
I'm just making sure, man.
Look,
because
man.
You referenced Umkuru and I haven't heard of Umkuru.
Umkuru Development Community High School.
I have not heard of Umkuru.
Look, that's one of Basket Mouth, the Nigerian comedians. One of his, I think it was one of his earlier like mainstream piece.
Is his name Basket Mouth?
Basket Mouth. That's it. Now, the thing is, he's basically making jokes about around fancy schools and public schools. It's like. You can tell from the name that this is definitely a public school.
Yeah.
You know, St. Helen, St. Paul. Yeah. And then you have Umukuru Development Community High School. Now, you can ask anyone which one of these is public school. They will tell you the one with a long name.
Yeah. That's definitely.
Definitely.
The one that says community. It has
exactly,
community.
It has community.
Or like David would say, that project word there definitely says it's public.
It has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So misinformation is one of the downside of mass communication.
Mm.
So now the thing is, you could bring in restrictions, like you can see being something that's been put in place by countries like Spain, the Scandinavian countries like Denmark,
like Australia.
Yeah, exactly. You have Australia, and I think the French followed suit.
Yeah.
Now the thing is, it becomes very difficult to police, but those restrictions are just for what? For young people.
Yeah.
And those people are not at the polls; they're at home. Now, here's the thing. Internet blackout is not going to help.
Yeah.
It's not going to help very much because, the more technology advances, the more people, like we just saw with the, recently in India, they're going to figure out different ways to do, avoiding those blockades that you're going to put in place. The only solution to this for me is be at the forefront of that misinformation, and the only way to do that is civic education.
Yeah,
Because if you take civic education out of the equation, then you have a large number of you have a bunch of people that are for one have no clue how their policy works. They have no clue how their government works. Mm. They have no clue how their what different ministries and SOEs, what their mandates are. So when someone cooks up misinformation with regards to what the Ministry of Mines does, they're going to believe it without any questions because they didn't know what the mandate is. That's because there was no, there were no, for the most part, platforms made available for them. Now, when it comes to platforms, I think the civic education part, as a way of sort of like, as a method of combating misinformation, it's a two-party problem. You have the individual citizen that must participate in take for example attending a stakeholder engagement so that they're aware of what's going on in the political in their country's political and economic sphere.
Yeah.
And you have the central government, or more like the government that's basically dispensing this information. So the government dispensing this information with no one showing up, that's not going to help. And a lot of people being hungry about information and no one is dispensing that information, again, no solution. So both the people on the ground and the government have to play their part. And then this brings you to one very painful part.
Mm.
It's human nature. Anyone is going to generate false information when they are losing an election.
Yeah, or if,
most likely than not, they are going to generate.
Or if they see that something is not going in their favor.
Yeah.
Like an argument, I've seen it personally.
A very easy example.
Yeah,
just we've look all at seen it on it. A personal level.
Yeah,
we've when all you're seen losing it. An argument, you start cooking up stuff.
Or you start throwing accusations. Just got a little bit of PTSD there of one such particular argument, but yeah, you see it. I mean, you see it. So
you see it in our individual capacity. So that means it doesn't change on a large, on a societal level.
Yeah.
So you have a large number of people that are losing, instead of an argument. In this case, you have an election, for example.
Yeah.
They're not going to say, oh, you know what, we didn't prepare on this one. And you see the same thing with sports. When their team, when their team wins, they have a very good coach, very good players. Everything is just superb with their team. When their team loses, it's either the referee's fault, or they'll just pick one player in that, in their own team who they will crucify, just pin all the mistakes on him, or it's the other team's fault.
Or it's the coach's decision. In football, many times it's the coach's decision, because you can sometimes see that there's potential in the play, but the tactics being executed are not.
They're not matching.
Yeah, they're definitely, the potential and the tactics are not matching. One other particular thing that's also very visible was specifically what Mr. Banda explained about how effective that miscommunication was, or that and disinformation was. The people running out and celebrating in the streets. Example he explained.
Yeah.
Now, that technically would speak towards someone doing their best to create, which one is the ugly one? Disinformation, yeah. Disinformation is the ugly one where they say you are purposefully sharing false information to cause harm. And misinformation is whether you are doing it purposefully or not, but it does still lead to some sort of a direct social impact. It's not on a level that you can claim criminality or any wrongdoing to an extent, but misinformation still happens. So in that regard, you could see what the immediate first results were. People were celebrating prematurely. And Mr. Banda highlighted to us primarily by law, the ECZ announces results 72 hours after the polls had closed.
So that means you have a lot of people, it's safe to say that a bunch of people that were celebrating did not know the process with which the results are officially made.
Yes. Now, it's a similar thing, Hamoud, that popped up in that workshop. I don't know why that workshop coincided so elegantly with today's discussion. Because even yesterday, the trainer explained from some of the feedback that were given by some of the people in the room in terms of, because she first, in like the first morning session, the trainer tried to understand, you know, do people understand processes of elections? Especially civil society and civil society organizations and community leaders who are not political leaders. Do people understand? And the unfortunate thing is, many cases, many scenarios, you could hear the reasoning. Now, the one guy suggested, because, you know, remember back to the 2024 elections when you and I did the presidential elections, the reports that the observer missions submitted the next week after the elections. Remember where some of the opposition party guys were in attendance, and they asked in the Q&A to the observer mission heads, are you guys saying that our elections was free and fair? Remember that that event when I brought back that content?
So they had to be told that, no, we can answer that question now.
Because you've got a court, you've got a legal and a court's process.
Yeah.
Now, one of the accusations was also made yesterday, similar to that. But the one guy explained, now, one of the recommendations, which is one of the recommendations that was also there that we had to look at, one of the recommendations that was given by the observer missions back in 2024 about our presidential elections was lock people down in their constituencies like we did with the local and regional elections last year.
So let them vote
where they live.
Yeah.
Which I also believed, because I saw the chaos. We experienced the chaos firsthand in 2024. In 2025, suddenly you had this well-mannered, low-impact local and regional authority elections, and you were like, now where was this mood for 2024?
Yeah.
Now, I would have loved it if 2025 was 2024's mood, you know?
Yeah.
Where you live is, because I also thought that would have been the thing, but then it was explained there is, in the Electoral Act, a provision that makes the presidential election, the whole country becomes one constituency. So you can vote wherever you are.
I think locking everyone in their constitution, in their constituency is also going to come with a downside. Because, for example, you register to vote in one of the constituencies in Commerce Region.
You won't be allowed.
Yeah, you are registered to vote here and you find yourself in a different part of the country.
Yeah. On the day of the elections. Yeah.
Then you are not going to be allowed to vote.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, you are going to have another rally of, I was not allowed to exercise my right. And
yes.
You're going to have a whole type of debate coming out of that.
Yeah.
But on the misinformation part, something about that goes beyond social media now.
Mm.
And that is technology. You see, you have to understand that there are a lot of bots, and with AI, it's not even helping. So you have a lot of bots that are basically providing all kind of, all kinds of comments. But just bots aside, let's just, start from where this whole discussion started. That's of internet misinformation, and that's not bot farms, phone farms.
Mm.
Because before they were bot farms, they were phone farms. This is a thriving business.
For someone, yes.
Yeah. It's a thriving business. So what this has turned into is, if you and I are running for office and I want to tarnish your name, a lot of Namibians or a lot of Africans or a lot of people that are not aware about bot and phone farms will believe everything that I will say about you.
Yeah.
Because it has a lot of views.
Yes.
I'll just put it on my social media platform, whatever platform that I'm using. And then a lot of people will just look at the views and comments of like, okay, I mean, a lot of people have viewed this comment and a lot of people have liked it. Therefore, it must be true. It's not, because for all you know, I could have hired someone in South Asia or in West Africa or in Northern Africa. Someone that runs an entire franchise of, if you can call it that, of phone or bot farms, to just do the liking and commenting on every trash that I post about you.
Mm.
And when real people look at this post and see all the likes that you know that all the likes and comments and reactions and also the reactions basically because that this will also include the number of people that have shared this particular post. One thing that a lot of real people that are not aware of this you know how dangerous this technology is being used, especially when it comes to you know pushing misinformation out there. They would just look at the number of views, the number of likes, and assume because it was liked or shared or and commented on by a lot of people.
The impressions were a lot.
Yeah. Therefore, it must be true.
Yeah.
It's not because it's not. You can do that by just hiring someone that offers that particular service. Who's this?
And who can quickly share it with, because they've got access to so many accounts that can quickly, just quickly amplify this thing's prominence.
That's Spotify's problem right now.
Because it basically manipulates the algorithm of the platform.
Yeah.
Because the platform sees, oh, there's suddenly 20 devices with 30 different kinds of accounts.
Therefore, this must be real people.
It seems like this is the hot and trending thing. And then, it is found out that these are all fake accounts. Yeah. Accounts that were made two months back. Or they were made at the start of this year. All of them.
Yeah.
At the same exact time, these accounts were made.
Yeah.
Which was funny.
Now, last year, remember last year, was that November or December last year when X decided to add on this feature that revealed where this account is,
originates from. Yeah. Originates from, yeah.
A lot of MAGA accounts were coming out of Nigeria.
And India.
And India.
Yeah.
Now, look, the thing is, how are you making America great again from Nigeria?
And from India?
Look,
and they discovered all those accounts that were made before the US elections, like in that same year. They were made back then.
Look, man, I think it was about a year or two ago when it came out that a lot of people, a lot of students, especially from the US, I think, parts of Europe, were having their assignments being done by students in Kenya.
Mm.
So this is how, this is one of those downside, basically.
Talk about outsourcing.
Yeah.
Outsourcing
Max.
Oh, my goodness.
I know, right?
It's an ugly outsource. It's ugly.
You see, the thing that we have here is it has become a legitimate business.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know about legitimate, but you know, it's a business that you find in a lot. In a lot of on a lot of platforms.
Mm.
Yeah, and call it illegal, you know, movie or music streaming platforms. They are difficult. Okay, they are basically impossible to shut down because this is like. Have you read the 12 Labors of Hercules? Nemean Lion and a Linnean Hydra.
Mm.
Every time that you cut off one head, two heads pops out from the stump that one head was cut off.
Mm.
These are basically, you know, like illegal, platforms. When one of them is shut down, there are thousands out there that springs up.
Oh no, they collaborate.
They
collaborate. Do you know how I discovered? It's like my favorite platform. I won't mention names.
I also have my favorite.
Won't mention names here live on air. So, my favorite platform there. All they could do is, instead of the URL, the address, would say .com, they go change it to .co.
Yeah, you're saying .co.
They just drop the M. Or they would say the platform, and it would have .com .com. Something else.
You know, I ran into one called, it's literally called Donkey.
Yeah. They are becoming creative with the name registration because they know what Google and usually the American authorities.
Yeah.
It's predominantly the American authorities. They know what the American authorities are trying to do, and it comes through, for example, like what I discovered also, like my browsers at home. The one that I use is Mozilla, Firefox.
Yeah.
Firefox and Chrome report back to the US authorities if Dwight is sitting on a website which is basically pirating intellectual property of America or of the world.
Yeah.
So I know I'm sending feedback back without me knowing that I'm sending feedback back. But the downside has been these guys are technically, they continue to fight a losing battle. Because all those...
It really is a losing battle because, for one, how do you police that? You see, this is the tricky part that basically governance is about to face, especially when it comes to online misinformation.
Yeah.
Even if you bring about age restriction, social media methods, like what we are seeing in Australia, France, and Spain, and Gabon, how do you police that? Yes, you can say you can't be on social media, you know, until this age. At the end of the day, it's going to have to be a parents also who will have to play a role in, you know, at enforcing that.
Mm.
So now you will have to police someone's homestead. That's not going to be easy.
Yeah. And do you have authority to police someone's homestead?
No, you have, take countries like China, for example, that have, some of the strictest, internet laws.
Yeah.
But there are still ways that a lot of users bypass them.
Now, one of the biggest concerns, Hamoud, for example, like I said about the collaboration, if you know your illegal site's particular, you know, name and pronunciation, and you just Google search it, and you see suddenly when the attack happened, when they were stopped, suddenly you see a whole bunch of variants pop up as the original was attacked. A whole bunch of variants. That's as they are literally moving the library.
If you have gone on social media to look up some of these platforms, forget the video, read the comments.
Mm.
Man, there's a lot of Ubuntu going on there across race.
And no, Reddit is full of the Ubuntu-ness.
Also. It's a lot of Ubuntu. We are helping each other.
Is my platform? Is it off again?
No, don't worry. There's this one.
And you know what's also funny? Who also shares some of the hints about finding these sites?
It was
Pinterest.
Oh, no, content creators.
Yeah, Pinterest. Yeah. A guy, a Chinese guy made a video that is titled, It's illegal not to know these sites. And then I find one of my sites are there. I'm like, it's a look at this guy. Look at this guy suggesting things here.
This is where the human and the technology now are going to have a problem at being at par with regards to comprehension.
Yeah.
And, and mostly a walk around. Remember the story I told you about one guy that tricked ChatGPT? He first typed in chemicals to mix in order to make a bomb. And ChatGPT, of course, brings up this whole community guideline, I'm not allowed to share all this information because it's dangerous and all that. And then he switched the question, chemicals not to mix in because they may explode.
They may create a bomb. And then he found everything.
He found one heck of a list that, like, for example, if you mix this and these chemicals, this is very dangerous because it will explode.
Mm.
And bro is just there taking notes.
Maybe I should go and try my ChatGPT tonight about how to get free money.
Look, the workaround.
Without working.
Look, the workaround.
What's that meme? How to become rich without working.
Seriously? Without working?
Why, man? You have to dream big, Hamoud.
I think that's impossible because even if you're about, you decide to become a thief, you still have to work. Stealing is a lot of work.
Even if you become a thief, you still have to work?
Yeah, you still have to work. You really have to work.
You're just not paying taxes, but yeah, you're still working.
Yeah. I mean, we saw some of them working in front of Al Jazeera.
And actually, they do pay taxes because they spend that money anyway in the economy.
Yeah, they needed
so
hotels.
They pay that.
They needed eating establishments to tell each other, you will lower your voice. You know, we don't want to be on the front page.
Wait, what? No, Helmut, no. Don't bring it that close to us.
They also ended up on the front page, which is good for the media. And also created content for me every Sunday. Shout out, guys.
That joke will never get old, man.
You and I should forget about working public office.
Working in government, even in our lives.
Yeah.
Technically, Eagle FM must inherit us by now.
Absolutely.
Not just adopt, they must just inherit us.
Like at this point, we are cooked.
The best is for us basically to move back to our hometowns, ne?
Yeah.
And start from new.
Yeah. Just start afresh.
Yeah.
Wherever we show up. Oh, boy. People are going to go, so it's you. There are two reactions.
You are not the one they are bumping into. They're bumping into me.
Well, you're the one that attend events. I'm just here.
And then I ask, put up my hand. Hey, listen, I've got questions to ask you.
They're like, oh, it's you.
So
we're 4 minutes into the hour of six. This is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Let's take a live read before we continue. Vilvicha University 2027 applications are now open. Faculty of Health Sciences program certificate for enrolled nurse, midwife / accoucheur level 6, certificate in pharmacy level 5, diploma in environmental health sciences level 6, bachelor of social works honors, bachelor of nursing and midwifery science honors, postgraduate diploma in community health nursing level 8, postgraduate diploma in occupational health and safety level 8, postgraduate diploma in mental health nursing level 8, master of public health, master of occupational health and safety. Apply now. For more information, call 081-403-6406. The number is 081-403-6406. Vilvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. Before we continue with the public office is about to get a whole lot of difficult thanks to technology. You guys should learn to, code. I know coding is taking over, but, it's being taken over by AI, but at least just get the basics of it. Just how things work. Like at this point, it must be, there must be coding literacy in the very same way that there is computer literacy. Because at some point, I feel like that information is almost like the skills are going to be required to understand the tech world around you. Quick break.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna emi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora izatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa bora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu oma felane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of
its. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%. 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back to Eagle FM and the Eagle TV.
Yay! New product. Didn't know we launched it. What are you doing in the
third? I'm just putting you guys in the frame so you are famous, Moss.
Yeah, but now it looks like more like...
David is being snooped the fame. Do you see?
Now that you all are in the frame so that people can recognize you when you go for events.
Good on your ground. Since it's just David and me that go to events and Helmut doesn't go to events here.
Nope. I'm just here starting all the war and then you guys go out there and...
We're the front line.
Uh-huh. You're my foot soldiers.
Oh, did we apply for that position?
No, I mean, it's an interesting promotion.
It's a promotion. I did not apply. I didn't apply.
It's a war front.
I didn't apply for that.
You're either a general or a friend. There can't be two.
You know how Rwanda and DRC did the M23 and the other rebel group in DRC, Dirty, right? You know, how they run around and have to deal with all the explosions on the ground.
Mm.
But when it comes to negotiating in Doha in an air-conditioned room, it's a bunch of officials from Kigali and Kinshasa that fly there in suits.
Not the main guys. Foreign ministers and presidents that attend.
When it comes to going to Washington and Doha, it's a bunch of guys from parliament. But when it comes to going to Goma, it's M23.
You know that is quite interesting because that meeting is also showing you who are the main stakeholders.
Yeah.
Who are the main stakeholders in that business?
Well, Herman and I, we saw who are the culprits.
No, who are the main stakeholders in that
it
business?
It really shows you that.
Yeah. Because if I'm willing to be at the center of that, you are benefiting and you have been there, but interesting.
Yeah. Why would you just end there, David?
We are looking at, we have been talking about conflict for a long time. Let us look at the future.
Yeah, we are congratulating the Zambia.
Yeah.
But look at the information, the misinformation part, because the most incendiary part of this whole election was the 24 hours votes count.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which Moses Banner also pointed out here.
Yeah.
Started with misinformation.
Yeah.
And this is happening online. So then there's not a single country that, you know, that is not going to have issues with regards to, you know, to anything, let alone something as disputed as elections.
Mm-hmm.
But throwing information and the ease of dispersing that information or sharing that information, which is the internet and social media, every government or more like every country will now have to put all these things in mind because during every election cycle, beware of misinformation and disinformation and all that. But countering it is something that is going to be tricky.
Yeah, you know, looking at the current politics, internet of things or internet in general and the use of social media has a role to play, not only in terms of politics, but even shaping our lives. That is why every politician, either those who are transforming, those who have been in the 20th century and we are now in the 21st century, they must admit that you cannot run a successful campaign anymore without social media. You can also be destroyed by social media.
So there are pros and cons.
Yeah, there are pros and cons. But when I look at the politics of Zambia, you know, Zambia is the only country in Southern Africa that has a very interesting history, especially looking at the politics of national or general elections. Yeah. If you go to the history of Zambia and also look at how they dealt with the presidency, you realize that 80% of former presidents, you either jailed after you leave power. It's always like that. From the founding man himself, Kaunda was, you know, under house arrest.
Yeah.
But that's only happening at the top.
And also Frederick Chiluba.
Everybody was in jail.
And then the guy between Lungu and Chiluba, who was that guy?
There's also Sata. It's Michael Sata also.
Yeah, Sata as well. Yeah. Then they had an interim president.
Yeah.
The white guy at one stage.
And Zambia is the only country in Africa that violated the unwritten rules. It's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, post-independence of Africa.
Yeah.
And this is something that people don't speak about. There has been an unwritten rule to say Africa will never be led by somebody who is a white person. Those are unwritten rules. But due to that politics and also the aspect of interim, and there was somebody who was assisting looking at that context.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to say is that what shape the current, what happened last week in Zambia is a history of competition, and it's also history of opposition versus ruling. There is no party in Zambia that you can say this one is a ruling party. You are a ruling party this time, next time is somebody. And it's the only country also that exercises democratic rights to say, if you are not doing well with us, then we put another one. That's why if you read the books of history of Southern Africa liberation movement, it's only in Zambia they start breaking that cycle. You see it now in Botswana.
Botswana, yeah.
Then you also start seeing it in Malawi and all these things. But in terms of democracy, they are very good. But, you know, there is also a common problem that we are all sharing in Southern Africa. When you speak about unemployment, HH came to power. He did not solve all the main problems.
Mm-hmm.
Copper is still exported 70%, although it's semi-processed.
Mm.
He still did not do that. But maybe the reason he got that chance is how he positioned Zambia. If you look in the past 3 years, for example, Zambia had, at some point, they were at 100% debts to GDP ratio. They wanted to graduate to the next level, which is not a good level. We have 120.
Zambia, in 2020, Zambia became the first African country to default on its debt.
And you start to see
that was under Lungu.
And you also start seeing that the transformation that you want to bring, maybe people are still seeing to say, because for you to vote, there are two things that you look at. There's a devil you know, and the guy you want to make a try.
Mm.
Then they say, no, apart from what is happening, let's give him another chance because he is he's pro-transformation. Look at what he did to buying 26 stakes in Rubito refinery in Angola.
Mm-hmm.
You see that the man is trying, although he still have a lot of challenges. But one thing that he did not do well is uniting the Zambian people. Even that contestation is showing that in terms of cohesion, there is still those sides that have been there. You look at the issue of Edgar Lungu.
Yeah.
And people politicize that. And you know, politicians can use anything. And it was a calculated. and I know you discussed it about it at some point, but it was a calculated move to say, let's paint this guy a picture so that we can also get the votes. But you see that it worked at some point.
Yeah.
But I think he's also a fighter. Because fighting for presidency for I think 6 times being defeated, you must have balls. You are a big man. just to say that. No, it's true. it's perseverance to say.
Yeah.
Somebody will say.
No, man, don't get us fired.
No. You know, in the words of masculinity, there is something that is called testicular fortitude. It has been stated.
Yeah.
Even the researcher put it down to say, you have testicular fortitude. You are somebody who does not give up. It's not a bad thing.
Now I can't use my example.
Just to put it to that, but I just want to say he is a man who does not give up very easily.
Yeah.
but also maybe to show that he's ready to fight. But the main question that we should ask is not about who is winning. The question is that what are you doing? What have you done? And what transformation are we bringing to the people? Because taking you because you are not good and I want to try Dwight does not really solve a problem. And it's not a political replacement. It's a political holding people accountable. Yeah. That is exactly what they want. When you look at what the 46th ordinary session on head of state and government, that what happened, you start to see that African leaders, they are very tired of exporting. They just want to fight that magic pill. No, they are very tired of them.
But the magic pill, what they don't realize, the magic pill needs them to incentivize.
They are very tired of exporting raw materials. Yeah. You start seeing it every speech. Even the executive secretary, because executive secretary of SADC, you are an administrator. You are not really head of state.
Did Mahoz say something?
He said, guys, you've been talking about these things. Why are you not starting now? Yeah. Because he is an administrator, but you also start realizing that sharing that vision, every president in Southern Africa is speaking about name and the numbers are not numbering.
Mm.
And the just last three, at this point, there was a summary that was given by this guy also. He's African representative of Economic Commission for Africa from UN, who gave a whole summary. It's a very nice speech. I think everybody should go and watch it, especially if you're interested in SADC issue. He gave a summary to say there have been progress. This is what happened in Zambia. This is what happened in Namibia. This is what happened in South Africa. This is what needs to be done. Then the chief came in Nagangwa. He started speaking in Shona to say you cannot develop countries with outsiders. Although respect their partners, you cannot develop that. That is still the question that define elections now in Southern Africa. Even the Zambian part is still where we want to go because that is what is facing us. You cannot solve unemployment by creating malls. That is already it's a lost game. You cannot solve unemployment by ordering with me. Ordering with me is a survivor. You can't build an industry with ordering with me. It's a survival, and people are making a lot of money out of it. Yeah, it's a survival, but in terms of sustainability.
It's a survival mode.
Yeah, it's a survival mode. And also opening malls. You're building hospital, yes, is good, but those are the basics.
So by the approach we are having prioritizes consumerism.
Yeah.
Basically, yes. Which is also one of the things that what David is explaining also is that it's what Namibia suffers from today. What Namibia suffers from is that explainer I gave yesterday. Namibia went from which my basic business administration subject on high school taught me. Namibia, organically a country is supposed to go primary sector, secondary sector, tertiary, and then you get into services. Because these first three lay the foundation for you to basically not transform, what's the word? Your economy morphs into other sectors that then basically build up from the first three, which are foundational. Now, what is primary sector? It's agriculture and the mining. It's getting the things out of the ground. And it's fishing. It's getting the things out of the ground, out of the water. And primarily, it's not processed. Then you probably wash it off, clean it a little bit so that it looks more presentable. It doesn't just have all the dirt and the grime on it. But it's still in its raw format. You didn't add any value. You just washed it off.
Yeah.
You just rinsed it off. You put it under the tap and you take it out. Now, where Namibia, which NDB6 wants to do, NDB6 wants us to do, wants to reach secondary level and then tertiary level. So secondary level means from the tomato that we get from the farmer, let's then have a tomato paste manufacturing plant, which can make tomato paste for the chefs and tomato sauce for the households, you know, for the people that just want to quickly spurt some tomato sauce on their slap chips and situations at home. And, you know, who want to feel like a mini, what's that guy's name? The chef that my brother used to watch. I could never understand what my younger brother did. This. He would watch cooking channels. And the thing makes me hungry. But he's watching the whole, like...
It's John Oliver.
Jamie Oliver, yes.
Yeah.
He would watch the whole Jamie Oliver show. Yeah. Jamie Oliver like makes lovely food, but it's food that you don't make at home.
Oh, he'd written a whole book.
It's food that you don't make. So anyway, so you get the recipes and the stuff, and you get to understand, okay, what's about to go down. The dimensions that we are obviously talking about specifically of what David cited now, which is happening at the SADC level. Mm. Now, they're all waiting was now for Hichilema for the dust to settle here in Zambia. Yeah. Then you will hear the congratulations.
I think it's on there. There's one I think I was asking myself to say, these guys, do they have a colleagues WhatsApp group?
Yes, they do. Actually, the contact numbers there.
Just to say hi,
it's just
coming.
All SADC heads of state.
Yeah.
And they technically call each other. Mm. You guys will see this.
It's something that I also ask myself to say. Even at the SADC level, we are on our own block, ne?
Yeah.
But at the continental level, maybe they also think guys that they don't really talk to, but you know you are colleagues at that level.
Yeah.
So, let me call HH to say how are things going there, or let me call.
Was it successful, brah?
Meme Samia Suluhu.
Yeah, don't worry, I will congratulate you formally.
How is it going? Don't worry, I've got my speech. Just want to know, is everything okay your side, you know? Any chest pains?
I mean, look, that happens. I think it's safe to say that that actually happens. Do you remember the Signal scandal coming out of the Pentagon?
Mm. Of last year, yes.
Yeah, that's basically the Signal equivalent of a WhatsApp group.
Mm. No, but here's the thing. Those were ministers and high policy decision makers in the Trump government, who accidentally added a journalist onto.
Mm.
Now that I think about it, do you know that the journalist never said who added him on?
Mm.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Look, ne, I think SADC leaders are very diplomatic, high level of diplomacy. You know.
Right. They are the only ones that call each other honorable, your excellency. And you go to other parts of the world, it's just Mr.
Yeah. You know what interests me? When I was looking at that summit, my eye was on the colonel.
Mm.
The guy from Madagascar.
Mm.
Do you know that? No, he was there. Very calm. No, he's part of the meeting. He was part of the head of state, part of the meeting. Then the question that they should ask to say, you know what happened? Previously, somebody ran away with instrument of power. Ran away with instrument of power because of that conflict. Yeah. But because you can't interfere with other countries, you welcome the guy who come.
So like a Turabo.
He's wearing a suit.
Are the lawyers, but the Turabo steps in.
Yeah.
Like a Turabo, but for power.
He came in, he was there. But that is also diplomacy to say, and one thing that you also need to know, ne? Is that position, especially in politics, matters.
Mm.
When you leave that office, you went with instrument of power, you were the chairperson of SADC, maybe you were just there for 2 months, then chaos happened, somebody lifted you, they don't even know where you are. People continue with business as usual.
people now have to realize we have to work with a new guy.
Yeah, they just continue to say, no, in Madagascar, where are we continuing? There's no other thing to say, no, we want the other guy. They just ask, where are we continuing?
It's like, you know what, where were we?
Where were we? And that is also very interesting to say. Sometimes, if you are not putting your house in order, people will help you, but they will not really come to your house. They will just say, no, Helmut, are you still there? Yeah, but I think it was interesting for me to watch and also see to say, how do you integrate a new person, whether whatever the way you came in, but you are still, you know, ahead of SADC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like you can send them a formal congratulations, so nice coup.
Yeah.
The guy was part of the end of year. This was an end of year session that they have last year. And he was part of the Zoom call, you know. Mnangagwa,
you can imagine the size of the elephant in that room.
Mnangagwa was staying here on the middle of the road with, you know, the overall remarks.
Mm-hmm.
But it was... because was it Ramaphosa that had to give over to Mnangagwa last year?
No, Mnangagwa took over from that what have happened
accidentally.
Nangagwa is the one who is giving to Ramaphosa. Ramaphosa, yeah. He's giving to Ramaphosa.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah, yes.
Because it was Mnangagwa and Suluhu Hassan that wanted to bring Kagame and Tshisekedi together. That was before the whole, transition from Mnangagwa to Ramaphosa.
And you know what is very interesting about Sadek, ne? If you look at, I think we discussed about it one day, to say, if you are in Egypt, and you are looking at Sadek, you are also laughing at some point. To say, you know, things that we do, yes, we are most peaceful region. By the way, we also get things when it comes to power. It's also interesting. It's not that really peaceful, but it's understandable peace. You look at Zimbabwe. You look at Mozambique. You look at Madagascar. Then you look at Tanzania. At some point, Meme Samia was the head of protocols. I mean, the organ of politics and security. But the security was not able to protect its internal affairs. But where the progress is, I think, is only the aspect of mine. To say you can't solve Sandek problem with politics. Yes, with peace. But the real business is that if you read all the speeches, they are sounding very well. They just like the start. Just like the start.
Look,
yeah.
my point of view on politics was painful, but it became somewhat even more painful when Dwight pointed me in a certain direction.
Yeah.
When you look at the things that we are implementing both as a country and as a continent, you think, man, the African Union came up with it. No, it didn't. It's coming from pre-colonial era. I just found out that the Great Green Wall dates back to 1950s.
We all save at USave. This week's specials are any 2 2-liter Pepsi, Miranda, or Mountain Dew soft drink, just $30 million. 100 grams Frisco granules, instant coffee at $28.99. 1 liter Long Life Clover milk, only $22.99. Pay just $20 for 8 or 100 cups Clover Daily snacks. 500 grams Yummy Poloni at $26.99. You save your low budget grocery store where good food costs less.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu omafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. So, where was I? Homerun, Helm, Dwight, you know the drill. So, when you look at
it. Double D. H double D. Huh? Oh, hard disk drive. What did we say it was?
Hard disk drive.
But what did we say we should not call it? Okay, let's stop.
Don't go any further than.
Yeah. And before you continue, I'd like to say thank you to the viewers on our, especially our Facebook. You know, there are healthy numbers there. Because on average, we get like 2,000 more, you know, plus 2,000 and above views per home run session. And even for the other Eagle FM, you know, programs that we stream. Shout out to you, the viewers and the listeners and the, you know, the supporters and followers of Eagle FM. Thank you once again, guys. We really appreciate it. Obviously, it's something we tried and experimented with, and we brought it back in 2026. So, yeah. Where were you, Helmut?
And we discovered that Die Denke Werk. And we were now Winnie stop nie.
Ons gaan nie ophou nie. Ophou nie stop nie.
Why are there a lot of knees in Afrikaans?
Because it speaks to the negative.
The Afrikaans is a very interesting language because if you are putting it together words by words, you realize that they are speaking backward
in a way.
In most cases. Yeah.
You can actually speak in three tenses, yeah, but the same sentence.
Yeah.
You can say ons gaan nie ophou nie, which is we will not stop.
Mm.
Or you can say ons sal nie ophou nie. So you see, I just substituted gaan en sal. And then the last one is ons wil nie ophou nie. So you can be saying the same thing in three different sentences.
But there is just something that I cannot I cannot imagine, eh? You know that time when we were growing up.
Mm.
You know these kids that are coming from this side of the red line, they are always giving us problems, especially with their basic Afrikaans. You know, it was like a very painful thing, eh? If you are it's not about project school. Because somebody who understood Afrikaans at that time, coming to the northern part of Namibia, December you are playing, you are treading very careful so that you are not insulted in Afrikaans. Because it was like you were shot with it was some of the most painful things. But
there are a lot more people.
Now they are. I think they are teaching it in Ogodiva also.
I know Ogodiva is full of it. Yeah.
It was just something that, I think it's a colonial mindset, man. Just something that was very, very dangerous. Yeah.
For all you know, the insult was your Grootfontein.
My friend.
And someone had no idea.
And you know what is also shocking?
A big fountain. Hey.
What is also shocking is that when you start growing up,
my dirty mind just went haywire. But anyway,
when you start growing up, you realize that there are different types of Afrikaans. There is one for exuk werk, the basic one. Then there are certain levels. There is an academic, there is a street Afrikaans.
Yeah, right.
They are different.
And then there's one that the teacher uses.
Then there is one for I'm sorry to say this, but the standard of the Afrikaans for me is Namibia. Everybody was commenting about it. There are levels.
Yeah,
but it's just something that I want to bring about. We
had an African show here on Eagle FM, and then I remember Wanda and Franz told me the next day, what are you saying, Dwight?
Yeah.
I was like, what do you guys expect?
No, look, they wanted you to go ekre, so that everyone understands.
Yeah.
Well, one thing, the first thing I learned about Afrikaans was in Arandes. There's nothing to reference there, believe me. We're going to get fired. Now, the second thing was, Tura Afrikaans is very simple, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like binaries, zeros and ones. Yeah. It's either, you know,
you respond or you don't.
Yeah. It's either you're responding or you're running.
Mm.
Because, it's either ekverkoop or exaliostik. Ekverkoop means it's timed, you know, it's the economy. Money is moving.
Yeah, money is moving.
Exaliostik means you are moving, not the money.
You have to move, but guys, I think coming back to Zambia,
yeah,
maybe it's also just not to analyze and also to compare with Namibia, to say when Zambia voted for HH, what is that they really look at? Did they look at the emotion, the other part of the fight with Rungu, the political part, or they look at the man himself, and what are some of the expectation? Do we expect him to do more or to maintain the pace? Because if he continued doing more as he started, maybe he will become one of the well-functioning and better presidents.
Yeah.
Because it's rare to make bold moves, especially against selling your health data to the US, for example.
I mean, HH got it right, Ned, to where the, what's Zambia's currency? Kwacha.
Yeah.
The kwacha is stronger than the rand.
Yeah.
The kwacha is stronger, and remember what was the default story that you mentioned about Lungu? And what did we correlate also with the Afrobarometer dimension about, you know, if the person has a job, they don't care about corruption. But if the person doesn't have a job, they believe the whole government is corrupt.
Yeah.
So the first thing that HH sorted out was the ability for the ordinary Zambian to buy. So it brings back to the consumerist markets. that you guys reference, which is the major concern for the modern Zambian, which you'll find in modern Namibia also, South Africa. We all want to live in the urban settlements.
Yeah.
And we all want the money to spend. We all want the smartphones. We want to wear posh.
Mm.
We also want to drive the double cab, sir.
Yeah.
We have an opportunity.
But when you look at the economic indicators of Zambia, they are also giving you a different story. I wanted to find the numbers and also compare the general unemployment, the youth unemployment. Give me something, numbers below below yeah, 10.
There's the kwacha. One kwacha gets you 80 cents, South African rand.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. I think it's this is very strong. When you look at the economic indicators, you look at the youth unemployment, you realize to say they are below 11 percentage.
Mm.
But when you look at the broader structure also, you realize to say 2025, 2026, 80% of the people are in the informal sector. Then you are asking yourself a question to say, what are these statistics based on?
Mm.
And also, are these statistics really mean that it's a sustainable job or it's a survivor?
Mm.
And what is that that they are sharing with Namibia? And also to look at a population of 20 million people and above. It's a very big population.
Yeah.
And also to look at the ranking, you realize to say lower middle income country, there's still a lot of work need to be done. But looking at that population, they are ahead than Namibia.
Mm.
Maybe there's a lesson we need to also learn. But economic indicators will never lie to you. Where the country came from, where it's going, is it maintaining a certain zone, a certain pace, or is going to... Oh, it's going down. And I think let's wait and see. Although there is always a saying to say we are growing, but we are growing very, very slowly. When are we going to put that gear? Because Zimbabwe has started diplomatically but firm.
Yeah.
To say pre-processing, processing to total ban.
Yeah.
South Africa has been doing it, although there is still a lot of things that need to be done. Namibia. We are talking about it. We have been speaking about it. But I think we still have a very good intention. But in terms of data, maybe we are starting this year. Because we don't want factories now. We want a directive to say, can we start with pre-processing? Can we go to, before you go to total ban, can we invite our developmental partners to come at home?
Mm.
Because if we are not doing that, then we are still going to be in the politics of the 20th century.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I've learned about elections from our own elections here going back to the 1990 to independence was, the longer, when someone is voted into office, the numbers are usually high.
Yeah.
But the more you re-elect the person, you see the numbers dropping.
Yeah,
I just looked at that from Namibia's elections, and I looked at some African countries that have people that have been in power winning elections by a landslide for decades. I'm like, there's no way this is possible.
Yeah,
yeah. No. And now, if you look at Hagenda Shelma, for example, 2021. 2021 he wins with 59 point something.
Yeah.
And now you have 7 million voters that registered to vote.
Yeah.
About 80% of those turned out to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So out of those 7 million definitely 7 million.
Yeah.
Out of the 7 million that registered to vote.
Yeah.
70 to 80% of them, turned out to vote, and he won by 59.3 million, percent.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward to 2026.
Yeah.
There are nearly 9 million people registered to vote.
Yeah.
And but the voter turnout was 57%.
Yeah.
Yeah, 57%. Down from 70-80%.
Yeah.
But the thing that you see here is that even though the voter turnout was low, his voter percentage increased from 57 to 60 something. So yeah. you can see that they seem, from the look of things, a lot of people that are cutting him some slack here. Yeah. Not just from the fact that he came into office taking over a country that has just recently took over in 2021. In 2020, that country has just defaulted on its debt.
Yeah.
The first country on the continent, not a very good record to have.
Yeah.
Now he takes over a country like that, and takes over. This was in 2021.
Yeah.
We just got out of COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine like all countries,
yeah.
Zambia was just negatively impacted by the COVID-19 lockdowns.
Yeah.
So that means there were economic issues that were just... he had a lot of economic issues that he had to work out.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward to... now you look at, we're looking at 2021.
Yeah.
Fast forward to 2022, Russia-Ukraine war.
Yeah.
And now we're dealing with a block equals and block. All these things, yeah. All these things are just striking blow after blow on all economies,
yeah.
Which includes Zambia. So now, as a voter, I think it's important to look at all these things that are outside the control of whoever it is that you voted on in the executive office, because all these things are dealing blows on your country's economy. Yeah. So if you don't know that these things are having a negative impact on your country's economy, you would think it's the president's fault.
No, you are correct.
Iran, Israel, U.S. war, it's not Netumbo's fault.
Yeah, I hear you.
Definitely not.
It's not.
No, you are correct.
But the negative impact of that economy, of the block equals and block, it's impacting Namibia's economy. So fast forward to 2030, for example.
Mm.
If you didn't know better about the economy, you'd think, okay, everything economic problem, it was his or her fault, and it wouldn't be fair.
But you know,
before we go on, okay, take a quick ad break.
Oh.
Need some help with the groceries this month? Then YouSave has a competition that is just for you. Every Friday between 1 and 2 p.m., Eagle FM will be giving away a $500 YouSave voucher. To stand a chance of winning the $500 YouSave voucher, all you have to do is follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and be on the lookout for the weekly competition question. YouSave, where good food costs less.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. We have 14 minutes left to the hour of 7. You're still listening to Home Run with Helmut, Dwight, and David on your number one talk radio station, that is Eagle FM. So to wrap up on this whole election, or more like wrapping up my point, is that, this is why I believe civic education is it's the thing that pretty much every government should prioritize. Because if people do not understand, I believe there are a lot of people that understand national, regional, and the global economies, the ups and downs, and how it impacts our respective national economies on the African continent.
Mm.
But I don't believe there are a lot of people enough. I believe there's still a lot of people that still need to know that there are external economic shocks that will impact us, and it's not your Minister of Finance's fault.
Mm.
It's not your fault. You know, it's not your president's fault. You can have any political party representative in the, you know, in the state, in the state house,
yeah,
or in the executive office.
Yeah.
But these external economic shocks will just impact your country, and there's nothing much you can do. So, but as long as you don't have a lot of people that know about all these factors, that just all these, you know, all the things that impact a country's economy, you still have a lot of people that will blame everything on the president. And as a result, you know, that fuels misinformation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because all I'll just do is put up a post on social media that says, you know, or you know, Namibia from 2020, from 2025, 2026, all the way to 2030, Namibia did not perform well economically. Therefore, the president did not fulfill her promise of, you know, her promise, the, every economic promise that she made.
Yeah.
Therefore, everything is her fault. Now, the only way I will not be able to say that with a straight face, at least, is if I know that there was there was a Strait of Hormuz, economic negative impact that impacted us,
yeah,
which is not her fault. There was a Russia-Ukraine war. There was the increase in fuel prices. There was this type of conflict, or there was this type of economic issues.
Yeah.
Go back to you know, to 2008 financial crisis, for example. If you did not understand, how corruption, just a picture to call it that way, corruption in economic powerhouses like the U.S. and, no pun intended, housing market would impact a country like Namibia, you'd blame everything on the, you know, you'd blame everything on the president.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this is something, now, this is a domino effect from a series of financial decisions, terrible financial decisions that were made by a bunch of investment bankers halfway across the planet.
No, I hear you. And I think the only aspect where I differ slightly is the aspect of, is the aspect of, is the aspect of external force.
Yeah.
As much as you don't want to blame the captain of the ship, give it a practical example to say, You are all in a ship or various ships in the sea,
but not on canoes. Please.
Yeah, not on canoes. But there's there's a storm coming.
No, you're just being dramatic.
Canoes also.
We had to set a standard.
There's a storm coming. A storm coming. Some of majority of these ships, they drown. Some they survived, but when you are in a very difficult situation, the captain of the ship have to make strategic decisions.
Yeah.
To say, there's always this word coming out, when there is trouble, women and children first. I mean, you get a life save later. You can swim on your own. Just to look at that aspect to say, regardless of whatever happened, the decision of a leader during difficult time is always understandable. To say, it's a Russian-Ukraine war. Why your country is moving at 1% economic growth, why others are 6% economic growth? They are all impacted. They are all low-income economy.
Yeah.
But the decision of that to say, we can come to the point of saying, we had a very good president. He at one point made this decision, but the situation can also be able to be seen. But there are aspects where you can say, no, there are decisions that were made, but these decisions, they did not help us anyway. Even in crisis, leadership is actually defined during crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot entirely say, you don't have control. Why, how did you react to protect your economy during that aspect?
Mm-hmm.
We are all in the same sea. Other people reach the shore, but other people have drowned. But that is just one thing I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Lastly, which I wanted to add on is this, the behaviors of voters are unpredictable.
Yeah.
Whether you have a civic education or you don't have a civic education, but participation is what matters. And events that happen even 24 hours before elections, the minds can change. Look at what happened to EFF. EFF was supposed to be the official opposition in terms of all the prediction of all the political analysts in South Africa. But MK came from Norway. then eat up all the voters.
and they took all the Zulu voters across the country.
That's why in analysis of election, there are always three kind of voters. Mm. There are voters that are saying, no matter come thunder, come fire, I'm going to vote for Helmut. Mm. There are voters that are saying, whether Helmut have done what, I'm going to vote for that. Then you have this one that are called flip floppers. And they are the one that are defining elections.
Yeah.
You have young people, you have young professionals, you have people that are voting not based on reality, but they are voting you based on what you are going to do. But those one are very difficult. That's why campaigning, most of the campaigning strategists, they look at these voters to say, a young person is going to vote for the first time. How should I capture this person? And if you capture him now, there will be another problem that will come after this term, that you have to convince this person. The loyal voters are always going to be there to say your powerhouse is Karas region. Mm-hmm. Your powerhouse is the old region. This one are going to be your loyal voters. Whether you put somebody, whoever you put there, they're going to vote for you. But the main one are this young generation. That's why the politics of Africa now, it's undeniable that these are the young people that are coming out. Yeah, that's why the behavior of voters can change anytime. And but one thing that you have indicated, and I like the way that you have put it that way, especially to look at the aspect of what can you do during difficult situation.
Yeah.
Don't blame it on only one person. Mm. You can also blame it on myself to say, what did I do during that difficult situation?
Mm.
And look at the head of financial institution, and I like pointing to them. How did the Minister of Finance react? Did he or she advise the president well? How did the Minister of Trade reacted during these economic shocks?
Yeah.
How did the governor of the bank reacted? Because blaming one person is really unfair. Yeah. And I think should not be defining the Southern African politics.
I think we have a very naive point of view on politics. This whole idea that, you know what, if my political party was in charge, everything will go smooth like utopia. No, it won't.
Supposedly.
No utopia.
There is not going to be any utopia irrespective of what, whatever political party you're going to have in office. There will be challenges. Some of the things, you can have any political party in office. The thing is, what you're going to have is some things that will be, put forth, especially in terms of projects. Some of them will be implemented all the way through. Some of them will have, will hit some snags, it's about, like you pointed out, it's about navigating the challenge.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, because there's not going to be a time where everything is, everything is just going perfect with no internal or external challenges.
It's not humanly possible.
like you have got to be naive beyond comprehension to think of it that way. From my observation, that's the point of view that a lot of people have on politics.
I think
if, if we were in charge, everything would be perfect.
I think it's an idea which is being sold also to people.
Yeah.
To say, even in Singapore now, there is somebody who is going to bed hungry today as we are speaking. In Singapore, in Dubai, in Saudi Arabia, there's somebody who's going home now without food. But these are some of the richest countries in the world. And it builds to a point of saying, there is no utopia, does not exist, especially where things are flowing. Because when things are flowing, competition will always be there. And we can hate capitalism and all these things.
Yeah.
But by nature of things, I think the capitalism ideas are with us to say there are winners and losers in any human competition.
There are winners or losers. We all start with a race of like 2 million of us, and we won.
Yeah.
Which is why we're sitting here, having this conversation. Thank God Dwight is not here. Now, the thing is, I think we should start by understanding just the basics of, we have to get out of the ideal world and start acknowledging that we live in a real world.
Just say wake up.
we just have to, you're right, we just have to wake up and come to the realizations that challenges are going to be there.
Yeah.
Because the sooner we acknowledge that challenges are going to be there, And the more we acknowledge that, the more we are going to realize one thing, that we actually need each other more. Because this whole thing of living in the fantasy world of, you know what, if I, just put me in charge and nothing will go wrong. Dude, you have five baby mamas.
I am the absolute authority. I can change your world for you. And then you realize, that's what my pastor also said.
Just had to bring in pastor.
We are not going to engage him now, but when the time is right, we are going to enter that conversation. look guys, I've got one key story now about a pastor. I went to a funeral of a great aunt of mine. We sat there and then we didn't realize there were three pastors in charge of her funeral proceedings. Then the pastor with the bluest suit shows up. Now, you've got to know, if a pastor shows up with the most colorful of suits in the world that you have seen, it's going to be a long sermon they're going to deliver. Homeboy starts off his sentences in Afrika, and it's in Afrikaans he starts with. He says, "Ek gaan nie lang praat nie." Then we knew. The immediate thing is this: if you come from a place for example, from the south or like from Rehoboth, where you know there are people that love listening, they just love preaching to you, especially if you've gone to other churches. And then when a pastor starts a sentence like that, I will not be long. Then you know, my goodness.
Oh boy.
We sat there for 2 hours and 30 minutes.
I'm telling you.
Jeez. All right.
but you know, I think I'll contribute when it's Sunday.
How do you say let's pray in Afrikaans?
Come on, bud.
Oh, yeah. Well,
bet.
Yeah.
The
first time I heard that, I was like, betting a church? What's going on here? Until tomorrow. Same time, same place. From me.
See you, colleagues. Let's follow the oil and the gas summit.
I shall be invisible, colleagues. Don't worry.
It's coming.
But we will be here in spirit. Aluta continua.
But the thing is...
The oil is coming, so the looting can continue.
But yeah, see you around. Tomorrow is another conversation.
Yeah.
You see, that's why you and I will be beaten up at the summits because of Helmut.
Yeah,
I know.
Helmut will get us into trouble.
Yeah, we are representative
out there. All right, see you tomorrow. Yeah.